Gentlemen, ladies, Tim Shorts of Gothridge Manor doing a lunchtime podcast. I got some calls in. I'd like to get to those. A few of them. First off is Joe the lawyer. He's a bit of a perv, but that's probably why I like gaming with him. And take it away, Joe.
Hey, I'm Andrew the lawyer. Yeah, I've been having a great freaking time playing this game on Mondays with you. It's really cool. It's fun. Good group and everything. But, dude, you left out the best part, man. Matt's little hobbit getting laid. And hobbit herpes. Come on. I still think you got to roll for hobbit herpes. Some point in the future, he has, like, itchies and scratches and, you know, little sores or something like that, you know? Anyway, talk to you later, man. I'm having a great time. I look forward to the next game. We have a full compliment, like you said. So Eric Tankar and Jason Howes, should be a great group, I think, man. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling in, Joe. Yes, Matt's hobbit did get laid. There's a particular lady in my town of Houndshead, or more hamlet of Houndshead. Her name is Lavinia. She's like the 6'3" middle ages kind of bartender, but she owns the inn. She runs it, and she does have a taste for hobbits. So anytime a hobbit comes in, they do get special favor, but that usually lasts about once, and then she moves on to the next flavor of the day. So I don't know, Matt. Joe's really convincing me to roll on the STD table. I didn't even know there was one. Apparently, Joe's telling me there's like a venereal disease table somewhere in one of these things. I know about the strumpet tart, you know, the one in, the DMG one, where he basically went to his thesaurus and named every type of prostitute there is in there. But I don't know, Matt. Joe's convincing me. You might be getting itchy later. I don't know. some shit that goes down in my game. This is why I do not record my game. You know why? Because I want my guys to be inappropriate as possible. They can kick back, relax, just be ridiculously stupid, and just enjoy the day. So, the next call-in I got from Vance. Vance, other people call him VA. So, I'll let Vance do the talking.
Hey, Tim, it's Vance. Hey, just listen to your last little lunchtime condo there. Yeah, powerful big bads for low levels. That's gave you an opportunity for some fun roleplay. One thing I've seen, read, whatever, is especially for low-level parties, the idea of having, like, them seeing something big and powerful and out of reach for them, you know, the dragon flying over that doesn't even pay attention to them, or a disdainful villain like our warg. So that's cool because it can be, those things can turn into a recurring villain or an objective or incentive to level up so they can finally go toe to toe with this guy. So anyway, have fun, and I will talk to you soon. Hope we get to roll again together. Take care, man. Bye.
Thanks for calling in, Vance. Yeah, I'm going to get into this topic a little bit later in this podcast. But I definitely like having... Rob C. over at... In a Heap podcast. He was talking about unbalanced encounters. And I'm all for unbalanced encounters. Like I said, I'm a GM... And I say this a lot, and I will continue to say it, is our job is to present situations and problems and not solutions. I think the players are definitely capable of doing that, probably more so than us a lot of times, because hopefully with depending how many you have, between all of them, they can figure something out. But later in the podcast, I'm going to get into... kind of mini bosses and how to work them into a campaign and make them part of the, what do you want to call it, the environment, or just part of the campaign and how they influence it. And then I've got another one from good old Spike Pitt. He called in, and I definitely got to give Spike Pitt his room to talk. So take it away.
Hey, Tim, Spike Pitt here. Man, you've got some momentum going at the moment, crashing out some episodes, and I'm really enjoying them, mate, really enjoying them. And the last one, where you was talking about that adventure and how it was written, I couldn't believe it. What? Sleep don't work, and I would have a mutiny on my hands if I tried to pull a stunt like that with my players, and rightly so. I must say, I've read quite a few adventures in my time, and I've never heard anything like that, mate. And there must be so many different ways that you could achieve the same outcome, just being a little bit more artful, perhaps, or, you know, if you really need to. Wow, I think, like you say, it kind of smacked a little bit of laziness. But anyway, great episode, and hope this finds you well.
Hey, Colin, as usual, thank you for calling in. You know what's interesting about that adventure, Colin, is I read it through. The adventure itself wasn't bad. It wasn't great, but it wasn't bad. It was definitely a serviceable adventure, despite its, you know, ridiculous beginning monologue there, or its advice. But then it ended. Okay. Now, if I would have read the end of this thing, and again, this is the writer interfering with the freaking adventure. He went on to say there was supposed to be a certain ending where the players were supposed to escape. Okay? Well, if that doesn't happen, he has the old Dux Machina kick in, and then the Baron... So say your guys aren't able to escape, even if you played good and chose intelligently. Some Baron's guy will come by and knock off the wagon that you're in, and you're able to get free then. So basically you're getting free whether you did it right or not or whatever. I read that and I'm like, oh my God, dude. It's like in between that stuff, it's not bad. You know, it's your regular adventure. It's nothing great, but nothing bad. But the bookends are just complete piles of turds, man. It's just an advice and attitude and just game design. Horrible, horrible. Ugh. I need to brush my teeth after reading those damn things. And then here's the other thing I just always find amusing, especially in those situations. Okay, how many times have we had, and this is in video games too, because that happens all the freaking time. Your guy gets captured, and what they do is they put all your equipment in one chest. Why would they do that? No, you know, your guy gets captured, and he's got like a nice sword or like a nice shield, and you got like Blarmy in the background. Hey, give me that shield! I want that fucking shield. That's mine. I bonked him in the head. And then you'll have the other guy going, well, if he's getting the shield, I'm going to get the sword. You can't give him both. So, yeah, it's just going to get distributed to the goons that, you know, thumped them. Or whoever, like if a mage zipped them, you know, slept the crew, then, you know, it gets divvied out to his goons so they can be protected better. It's not going to be wrapped in a present in a chest. I mean, I don't know. That always just seemed weird to me. I guess I didn't think about it until like recently. And then I read about it in this one, like, oh, you know, if the characters get captured, they can find their contents in the chest in the wagon. Why are they taking the content? Why are they taking their equipment with them going to the slave pits or wherever they're taking them? Why? Why would they do that? Don't make any sense. They'd either be hawking it for where or for some money, or like I said, they would be distributing it to their other goons to use. Yeah, I know why they do it, because, you know, that way the players won't feel bad. And it's like, well, it's just temporary, you know, we can find all our stuff in this chest if we can just get in this chest. Not my game. No. Uh-uh. You get beat down, well, whoever beats you down, you know, to the spoils goes the winner. And speaking of spoils and winners, that leads me to my main topic. All right, guys, this is Tim Shorts again doing a drive home podcast, because at lunchtime, it lost my segment about the main topic, which happens too much, Anchor. Fix this, please. You've got Spotify money now. You got no freaking excuse. There. Take that for what it is. So my main topic is the like mini bosses or like kind of area bosses. So because my campaign is a forest, it's got a lot of wildlife that lives within the forest, along with the monsters and the ruins and, you know, the horrible organizations and secret cults and gods and, you know, whatever. Got lots of mixture of googly googly things in there. But what I'll do, like in real life, if you've got a territory that's kind of controlled by, let's just say, a grizzly bear. Grizzly bear pretty much is going to be the top of your chain and food chain in a, you know, a so many mile radius. That's going to be its hunting grounds. That's going to be its territory of influence. And pretty much, you know, you're going to find other lesser stuff within there. But when it comes down to who controls that area, it's going to be a grizzly bear, you know, the grizzly bear. So what I do is I have like mini PowerPoints throughout the forest. And sometimes it's an animal. Sometimes it is a group. Maybe it's an individual. And sometimes it's a place or a thing. It doesn't necessarily have to be a mobile thing to have control, have a, you know, like an area of effect kind of thing. In the case, the latest one was the warg. Now, the warg is definitely a territorial creature. It has its area of influence. So the players found one of its homes. So its area of influence is kind of around that hex. So let's just say like this one hex is its main base. Well, so that will be its strongest influence. And then the surrounding hex or adjacent hexes will have like probably still be affected by him, influenced by him, but it'll be weaker or to a lesser effect. And then sometimes you're going to have two mini bosses. I'm just calling them mini bosses for lack of a better word or term at this time. Where their areas of influence kind of intersect, and that's where you're going to have the conflict, where you're going to, like, if a player's come across that maybe the warg influence is in there, and let's just say that there's a wraith or a shadow that has undead that it controls, and those two kind of go at it in this one area. So the players might come into that section and find a whole bunch of wolf corpses or, you know, a bunch of skeletons destroyed. So they know that something's actually going on. And because you have two, you know, you have evil or the creatures and influences throughout, they're not always going to get along. They're probably going to battle over who's dominant. They're not going to settle for being a secondary power in their own home, so to speak. So, yeah, so that's what I do. So, and there's different ones. Like right now, I've got the warg, and then I do have a few other ones. I can't go into too much detail because, again, my players might be listening, so I can't say anything because they'll cheat and listen. Ha! But if I say something on here that they can glean information from and use in my game, so be it. I hope they do. I'd be dumb if they didn't. Because I will probably say shit on here I shouldn't do or shouldn't say. So that's one example. And then if you say you have an evil cult, let's just say like the players just came across a map for the Chanters, which is a known cult. They're bad news. The cult may have different ways of being influence the area. Right now, they might just have like a ruins that they're kind of setting up shop, putting on a new roof, putting up drapes, you know, making sure it's wall-to-wall carpet, kind of thing for their ceremonies. But there might be other smaller spots outside that. Maybe they're gaining some influence in town. Or maybe, because their influence isn't going to be that heavy out in the wilderness, because there's not a lot of conversion going on. And if there's a batch of wolves, you know, the wolves will eat the guys. They don't really give a crap whether they're evil cultists or not. They just know they're meat. But it'd be more of like, so like a cult's influence might be like many spots. Like you'd have definitely their main, there'd always be like a home area. So let's say like this temple ruins would be the main hub, if you want to call it for anything else, for influence for this cult. And then they might have adherents in different populated areas or in farms or other populated areas, and not so much in the wilderness. So those are going to be more like a scatter plot kind of influence instead of a sphere of influence. And then generally you're going to get, like when you get into the bigger stuff, you're going to have, let's say the players establish, like in my game tonight that I have, the players are establishing a strong, kind of a stronghold of sorts, where they're dealing with building a temple, building a trading post and a mage's tower. So their influence is going to be a little bit of both, because they're going to have people who are, they're going to basically, to be able to build that, they're going to have to take control of the hex, which they predominantly have, you know, put their foothold in right now, but they're still going to have to defend it from the adjacent powers. And again, it goes to that PowerPoint. Some of those PowerPoint, you know, power situation where there's going, some of those are going to be adjacent hexes, where you're going to have like maybe the grizzly bear next door who doesn't like being there, or he smells food and wants to nom on your head. But you're also going to have those type of folks in influence that are traveling ones. It doesn't necessarily, they don't have a home base. They're going to be like those random encounter ones. Maybe there's a big purple worm that just kind of comes right out of the middle of the earth. I like that idea. They come out of the middle of the temple and attack. And that could be more of a random thing, because if a purple worm comes, it can wreck your whole world really quick. And he may not have had any influence there until he decided to surface or whatever. So there's all of those little different situations of like power bosses, different types. So you've got your territorial one, such as an animal or, you know, people or something. Then your cult, which is going to be more of a scatterplot power source. And then you're going to have like one where you're going to have the players are going to have probably like a little bit of both. So you're going to have your hex with that you can control, but you're also going to have like influence in town with the allies that you make and maybe the homesteads that you make deal with, or merchants you make homesteads. So it's going to be a combination of the two. So when I develop those mini bosses, like I do, that's what I think of them as in a way. I guess it helps me organize them a little bit. Not necessarily, because sometimes I can't organize socks, let alone a campaign world. But I try to at least get a couple few. Like right now in my campaign world for the mini bosses, because in the hex that I have, then there's like 6 miles hexes. So each of those 6 mile hexes, there's a possibility of having kind of like a mini boss within there that kind of controls that area. And there's always, you know, and there's also that possibility that there's a secondary type of creature or thing in that area, just in case the big boss goes down, will be quickly replaced by who's like second in charge. So I think I talked enough, guys. I'm out. Have a good night. I got game tonight. Really looking forward to it. Running two games is fun. I do enjoy it. It's making me work a little bit harder on my campaign. We're trying to organize a little bit better. And I'm getting there. I'm not there, but I'm getting there. I know I haven't found, remember when I was looking for a program to help me, nothing seemed to jive with me that well. Although Eric Tenkar had, what did he have on today? He interviewed some folks from World Anvil. I might take a look at that, see what it's like. I'm not sure. I don't know if it's one I already tried or not. But I found my own thing with a combination of blog and Dropbox. I kind of like that. It kind of seems to work for me. So, all right, guys, I took enough of your time. Thanks for listening. Hope you get some gaming on. Roll better than me. We'll talk to you soon.